Who's Left Podcast, a show about Indiana politics, history, and culture from the unapologetic perspective of the Hoosier Left. My name is Scott Aaron Rogers, and I'm recording from Bloomington. You know, for a political sicko like myself, I have been embarrassingly ignorant about county government. With all the noise at the national and even state levels, most of us pay little attention to the areas of government we're most likely to interact with on a daily basis, and the officials whose decisions most directly affect our lives. A few weeks ago, I talked to longtime Monroe County Commissioner Julie Thomas, who gave me a bit of a crash course on county government. We talked about her record in office, and she gave her re-election pitch. Home to Bloomington, Monroe County is largely under one-party Democratic control. So, the May 7th, or vote early now, primary, more than likely determines the winner come November. And so, between the overall ignorance of county government and the fact that the candidates would all generally agree on the big national issues we spend our time focusing on, I didn't have a good grasp on the contours of the local races, the areas of intra-party disagreement, the contentious issues. As I've spoken with a couple more candidates in this county commissioner's race, the picture begins to come into focus. Thomas and fellow incumbent Penny Githens are facing aggressive primary challenges. In District 2, Thomas is facing fierce opposition from County Council member Peter Iverson, while in District 3, Githens faces two challengers, IU Law professor Jody Madera and longtime Bloomington City Councilman Steve Volin. Based on nothing more than the yard signs I see while driving about town, one thing becomes clear. Iverson and Madera are essentially running as a block. You rarely see one of their signs without the other. So, I'm going to cover the two candidates as a block and give you back-to-back episodes with back-to-back interviews. I'll have thoughts at the end. First, we'll hear from Iverson. In our conversation, we'll discuss his accomplishments on the county council before getting into his platform for county commissioner. He focuses his campaign on five primary issues: livable wages, quality of life, equity and inclusion, climate adaptation, and housing. We'll talk about each, as well as other contentious local issues like annexation and building a new corrections facility. But before we get to the interview, I need your help. In a media environment filled with bland, lazy both sides journalism at its best and blatant right-wing propaganda at its worst, Indiana needs independent left-wing media to inform Hoosiers about what's really going on in our state. My work is dedicated to calling out the Republican supermajority, their financial backers, and others in their network that actively work to make Hoosier lives worse. Those whose policies endanger our children through lax gun regulation, bullying queer youth, and poisoning our environment. I work to highlight these bad actors so we can replace them with more empathetic leadership and also shine the spotlight on the Hoosier activists, organizations, and elected officials who are doing the hard work to build a more just, equitable, and compassionate Indiana for the next generation of Hoosiers. But I'll take on Democrats too. When they put their donors over their voters, when they talk out of both sides of their mouth, and when they fail to push back against GOP authoritarian extremism with the necessary urgency and tenacity. I go deep to provide information and analysis you won't get anywhere else in Indiana, but I can't do it without you. I'm not motivated by the dollars, but everything costs money. Web hosting, equipment, editing software, travel to meet with other activists and organizers. I need your financial support, with a paid subscription over at scottaaronrogers.substack.com. For $5 a month or $50 a year, you can help me push our state in a better direction and help me keep the lights on. And look, if you can't afford it at this time, you can still help. Subscribe at the free level over on Substack. Set your favorite podcast player to auto-download new episodes of the show. Rate and review the show on whatever platform you use. Follow me on social media at facebook.com/who's left, that's H-O-O-S left, I'm also now on Blue Sky at the same handle. I'm personally at ScottRoj78, that is ScottRoj78 on Instagram, Threads, and Twitter, and on Mastodon at ScottRoj78 at Hoosier.social. I'm now posting video, too. Full episodes on YouTube and clips on TikTok. The handle on both of those is at Who's Left. Please subscribe. But most importantly, share our message. Forward the articles to friends, family, and colleagues. Don't just like, but share on social media. Spam your local elected officials. With your investment, a full-time Who's Left looks like new content every day, full coverage of the 2024 election cycle in Indiana and beyond, and it looks like zooming out to see how the networks acting in our state function nationally and even globally. It might not be in my financial interest, but I do not plan on paywalling any content because I believe in open access to information. And your support helps make that content freely available to all Hoosiers. But I desperately need your contributions in order to keep bringing you this meaningful content. So please, before this interview, pause right now, go to scottaaronrogers.substack.com and subscribe at the paid level. To those who have contributed already, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate every penny, and it means the world to me. And to everybody, thanks for listening. Now here's my interview with Peter Iverson. Peter Iverson, welcome to the Who's Left podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Oh my goodness, it is such an honor to be on with you. Thank you for the invitation, and I'm looking forward to this conversation and talking to voters about the issues that matter to localities.
Very good. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Who are you? Where are you from? And why are you running for Monroe County Commissioner?
Well, thanks, Scott. Yeah, my name's Peter Iverson. I am going to be on the ballot of those in Monroe County for county commissioner because I believe that the county commissioners are a body that should be for all of Monroe County. And when we say for all, I mean for all. It's a great community here in Monroe County. And, you know, my wife and I are raising our two daughters here. They go to MCCSC because public education matters. And we intentionally bought our home close to two different ice cream stores because it's always fun to hop on a bike and go over to an ice cream store when you're in Bloomington, Indiana.
I'll tell you what, I grew up like two blocks from a Dairy Queen. I think I'm paying for it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I grew up close to a Dairy Queen as well. And those are Midwest joys, you know, the times you get to go and just with your family or your friends and just enjoy the time together. And that is part of the quality of life that we're going to talk about in a little bit here that is so important to Monroe County.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently you are a sitting member of the county council. And for people that don't really know how local government works, county council is like the legislative branch. And then the board of commissioners is like the executive branch, essentially.
Not quite.
Kinda. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if you are a nerd like me, you can go find all this stuff in Indiana Code. However, I'm going to simplify it a little bit for everyone. The county council is in every single county. It's seven members. They're the fiscal body. They hold the purse strings. And the county commissioner, which is what I'm on the ballot for, is that administrative and legislative branch. So the county commissioners are the ones who not only are the ones, you know, that are doing the contracts and everything, but they're also proving all of the claims against the county. They have ownership of the buildings and all that sort of stuff. So, but what they don't have the power in Indiana Code is to spend that money. So that's a nice co-equal branch, the way that bodies work together. It's not always the quickest thing, but it is an effective way that we govern here in every county in Indiana.
Thanks for clarifying that. So in your time on the council, you mentioned three key achievements as a member there, supporting county employees, meaningful justice reform, and combating the climate crisis. Can you talk about each one of those just a little bit?
Yeah, and just for your listeners, you know, this is going to be, I think, probably a policy-heavy conversation. So I want to be as clear as possible in the different areas that we're talking about. And then I'm going to keep coming back to that everything that we're talking about is for all of Monroe County. It really is a position that I represent you. I am not, you know, ruling over you. And that's an important distinction that I want to make. Let's go ahead and start with the first thing, which I think was wages. And we are in a really unique situation in Monroe County where we have a beautiful community that's full of amenities. Folks want to live here. They want to visit here. You know, we know from data from Visit Bloomington that we are a destination for tourism. Folks come down here and they see everything that we have to offer and they want to live here. Part of the problem, though, is that sometimes folks find that the jobs available here, the wages aren't quite what they expected, or maybe they're having a hard time finding a job. And so that's something that I'm very interested in terms of economic development. And what that means for me is making sure that we are an attractive place for job creators to be. Whether you are a company that's trying to onshore semiconductors or a medical device producer, or you're looking to start up that brand new career or business in your garage, we want you here. That's my message, is that you know, we need those job creators with those high wages to be here in Monroe County. And the idea is that we're part of a unique set of assets in Indiana. And in fact, we're calling it the corridor. We've got Crane Naval Base is to our south. And if you come up I-69, you've got the Monroe County Airport, you've got an R1 research institution in Indiana University, you've got all of our medical device producers. It's just, it's a great area to be. And then as you go further up, you get to the Indianapolis International Airport. And it's just a great corridor, but we need to make sure that there are jobs there for folks. And that's what I was doing on the county council, is that as we saw that the labor market was behaving in very unique ways, we knew that we needed to retain our employees to provide the public goods that people rely on. Think public safety, public health, making sure that assessments are happening regularly. All these things that local government does that are necessary functions of the way you live your life are done by people. And so we needed to make sure that the wages there were competitive. So we worked within a salary structure to make sure that not only the salary ordinance, but also the job descriptions were in line with the work that was being done, that we continue to provide those services. And then we really worked hard to make sure that cost of living adjustments happened, even in a higher than average inflation market.
Okay. On to justice reform. What are your proud achievements on that topic in your time at the council?
Yeah, Scott, the unfortunate thing that's happening in Monroe County is that 15 years ago, the county commissioners were told that the conditions within the Monroe County Jail were unconstitutional. And so for 15 years, we've known this. We've been putting off the different aspects of that lawsuit in order for us to try and make progress. But unfortunately, progress has not been made. The Monroe County Sheriff still has to maintain the work that they're doing in the jail, which is in an old, dilapidated building. It's leaking. It sits on top of the judges' chambers and the courtrooms. And so water gets cascading down onto the judges' chambers and courtrooms. It's just, it's not a very good situation. And so in order to move the ball forward, I created the Justice Fiscal Advisory Council with two other colleagues on the county council. And that's Kate Wiltz and Jennifer Crossley. And we created legislation to not only talk about the issues happening in the jail, but look at the sequential intercept model developed by SAMHSA to think about not treatment, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and as well as how do we divert people away from the jail? And lastly, how do we get reentry to actually to reduce recidivism so that when folks enter the jail, they're not going through a revolving door and coming right back in. The key thing about that legislation is that we made it time sensitive so that we weren't carrying on these conversations over and over and over again. And the second thing that worked well is that we made it community focused. So we had individuals who had lived experience sitting at that table. We had individuals from the city. We had individuals from the county. We had, you know, individuals that wanted to give testimony as to what they wanted. And this is in stark contrast to what's happening in the status quo, where the county commissioners tend to want to make decisions behind closed doors. And it's not very transparent or open. And so that's something I'm really proud of. And the third thing that we did was we created a robust list of fiscal policy recommendations you can find online. It's available for anybody to see. And I've been giving updates to the county council about where fiscal investments are starting or have already been made in those key areas of justice reform.
Very good. Thank you for that. And finally, on the climate crisis, describe your work in that area on the council.
Sure. So I'm a proud Indiana University grad. I got my degree from the O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs, or SPIA, as it used to be called. And part of my work there was working on climate issues. I made some great relationships with professors, but also with the Indiana University's Environmental Resilience Institute. This is a crown achievement of Indiana University that's working with municipalities to build up the ways that they are thinking about not only climate adaptation, but also climate resilience. If you look at the literature on these areas, that's the academic literature, a lot of work's been done in cities. Not a lot of work has been done in counties. But you think of what we've already talked about in this conversation. Public health, public safety, the courts, the airport, parks and rec, all these areas, we need to be working on climate with these areas as well. And so that's the work that I've been doing, is I've been working directly with Indiana University Environmental Resilience Institute. I've now supervised 3 McKinney Climate Fellows, and we are about to introduce our climate resilience plan to the county commissioners for Earth Day. That's coming up later this month. And what that's going to do is it's going to kind of project to the world that counties can play a role. In fact, this climate resilience plan is really special because we will be the first county in Indiana to have this climate resilience plan. And what the climate resilience plan says is not only that we know what the vulnerabilities are in terms of climate for our area, but also what are the solutions that we have for those vulnerabilities. So we know from modeling data that we're probably going to see an increase in high heat days. We're probably going to see an increase in flooding. So what we did was we held 2 different workshops, again, community-minded for all of Monroe County, that made sure that we had people there from stormwater services, the planning department, Friends of Lake Monroe, people with lived experience, people from different cultural backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, farmers. We had a whole bunch of folks. And the first workshop was to identify all of the climate vulnerabilities that could be happening here in Monroe County or that already are. And the second workshop was those same folks, that identified all the solutions. All that's going to be in the climate resilience plan. And it's not a done piece of work. This is not some report that's going to sit on a shelf here. What this report is, it's a living document. It's going to be reviewed regularly. We're going to continue these workshops. That way, when we do have high heat days, we can ensure that we are protecting the most vulnerable in our community. That when we're seeing flooding, we are protecting the most vulnerable. And that includes some of the issues that we're about to talk about in terms of where do you build housing? Where do you build your infrastructure, right? So one of the things that we heard from the community was don't put houses in floodplains. That makes a lot of sense. And that's part of the work that local government's doing for the population is, and I think it's an important job to look at how we can think about climate resiliency from a policy perspective and really make changes on the ground that's going to benefit generations to come.
Very good. So before we dive into your policy recommendations and then jump into all those details, I want to start at the top level a little bit. You've criticized the incumbent commissioners, saying, quote, "The current county commissioners neglected to articulate a long-term plan for the county or set targets," end quote. Can you elaborate by what you mean on that?
Do you still want to talk about climate, or do you want to talk about planning, or do you want to talk about
there's a lot in general? This is high level.
Sure. So one of the things that we deal with in county government is are issues that affect not just a certain neighborhood, but indeed the entire county. And a lot of times we're dealing with issues that are really fundamentally important to our community. Think a jail or a treatment center for people with substance use disorder or a diagnosed mental health, a mental health diagnosis. Think about a convention center. Think about an airport. All these big, big assets in our community, they need a lot of planning. They need a lot of forethought, and they need a lot of community buy-in. That takes some time. One of the problems, though, that we have in current county government from our administrators and the current county commissioners is that it seems that those folks are much more interested in what's happening in the next media cycle and less than what's happening down the road. For example, a lot of times when I'm talking with folks about policy, we're talking about what's happening with the county comprehensive plan. This is an important document that guides our plan department, plan commission on how we go forth with development in the county. That document, that comprehensive plan, has not been updated or adopted for 15 years. That document does not reflect some of the new information we have about housing needs. It doesn't reflect the information that we have about the pandemic. It doesn't reflect information that we have about the new data in climate. There's just so much that's happened in the past 15 years. It's not been incorporated in our comprehensive plan. There's not a plan to move forward here. And that's really, really unfortunate. Similarly, and when it comes to climate, if you listen to what the current county commissioners are talking about, they're talking about putting solar panels up on county buildings. That's great. But that's kind of the basics, right? We know we need to be more mindful about how we're producing energy, but we also need to be thinking into the future. We also need to be thinking about our floodplain maps are being updated because we are concerned that what used to be 100-year floods are now going to be happening much more regularly. So that's coming from the state. We know that our stormwater folks are working on that, but it's a reality that we need to be mindful of. It should not take 15 years to build a new jail. Full stop. Sure. We should have had this done years and years ago. In fact, one of the things that has come out is that the desired location that came out from that justice body that I started with my colleagues was that folks wanted the new jail close to social services and close to public transportation. I think we can all, you know, agree those are great things. We need that. The ideal location that the county owns couldn't be worked on because there's a mound of dirt that would take 2 years. Well, additionally, with some electric poles to be moved, 2 years before we could even break ground on a new justice facility. If we had started that work 10 years ago, you know, we would have a new facility right now, but we haven't. And if you look at the actions of the current county commissioners, they seem intent on going on a lot of jail tours, but still the communication breakdown with other elected officials is really evident. And that's really unfortunate. You know, when we were running the JFAC committee, you know, we made sure that the sheriff was there, that the judges were there, both civil and criminal. And that's what you're going to, that's why I'm running. That's why I think folks are really excited about this campaign, is because they know that I'm someone that can work with folks across the aisle to articulate a vision about where we're going and come up with those strategies about how to get to that quickly.
Well, let's talk about your vision here a little bit. Your campaign focuses on five policy priorities.
That's right.
And I'd like to talk about each one just a little bit. So the first one I want to bring up is wages. And we've talked about it a little bit. So What can the Board of Commissioners do to help secure higher wages for Monroe County residents, especially given that there's an Indiana law preventing localities from setting a minimum wage higher than the pathetic 7.25 that we've had since 2009?
That's exactly right. So one of the things that I already have am working on is I'm president of the Personnel Administration Committee, which looks at those salary ordinances. We can adjust salaries, and that's certainly something the council can continue to do. As commissioner, I would encourage the council to work toward that to make sure that job descriptions were updated to earn those higher salaries. The second thing we can do is we can support unions. I was raised in a Teamsters household. My father did not have a college education. And if it weren't for that union salary, that union pension, he would be in pretty abject poverty. But because of the support that he got from organized labor, our family, we did pretty well. And, you know, I reflect on those picnics that I went to as a kid. And, you know, I worked on a couple campaigns in high school, and it was the unions that we worked with to knock doors and to, you know, really, worked with heavily. And so I'm a big fan of organized labor. And there's some things that we can do to work closer with organized labor here in the county, but it's going to take planning. And there are two specific items. Number one is that we do need some degree of licensing reform that fits in what we're doing right now in Monroe County with licensing. And what that means is, you know, how can we make sure that individuals who are doing a job can have the correct licensure to ensure that they've got the right training and the right background and they've been through the right steps so that they can be safe and have, you know, a good wage and all those things. And I think that work is really important, because if you look at some of the training centers that the unions are operating, they're bursting at the seams. You know, sometimes folks either they went to college and they realize that, you know, they can come over here and get additional training and earn a great wage, or they, you know, college wasn't for them and they come over to the training center. You know, it doesn't matter what stage of life they're in. They're going on this journeyman process that's guaranteeing them not only good work, safe work, but also really good wages. And I think so licensing is number one. Number two with the unions is there's work that we can be doing on prevailing wage language in the county. We know that other communities in Indiana have adopted prevailing wage language to fit their locality. And we have not been having that conversation in Monroe County. I've been talking with local labor here in Monroe County, and that's certainly something that I think we're going to have some robust conversations to figure out how some of that language can work here. But again, that conversation is not happening in the status quo. That's why I think having the labor background I do works. The second thing to increase wages, or the third thing, excuse me, is to work with our Economic Development Corporation, the BEDC, the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation. The current county commissioners are very skeptical about the BEDC and about economic development in general. In fact, the current contract with BEDC, which the county has, is not fully funded because the commissioners keep pushing back against this idea of economic development. Now, I think that we should be going in the opposite direction. I think we should fully fund the contract. And the reason I think that is because the BEDC can bring in really good paying jobs into this community. And you think about some of the most recent businesses that have relocated here, they're bringing in really good wages for, you know, specialized trained work that Ivy Tech is providing. They've retooled and are doing some of that work. And as if we can make sure that folks know that, you know, Bloomington is a place for you to grow your business because, you know, you can find the workers here, that's a benefit to us. And the reason why folks want to come here is because we're a progressive community. We've shown that when Democrats are in charge, we can attract business and good paying jobs here. And I think when we fully engage with our BEDC partners, that we'll be able to continue to do that work to not only bolster county employees, work with unions in a much more meaningful manner, but also bring in those businesses that have high paying jobs and that are community minded, just like our community is.
You know, I want to ask a follow up here because I do a lot of research. I've done an episode on the IEDC, the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. That thing is a corrupt mess. I don't know much about the BEDC. Do you think there might be some hesitancy on behalf of the current commissioners because they've seen the IEDC be what it is?
You know, I think what, you know, I've heard the commissioners talk about is more of the ROI of economic development. It's much more of a philosophical argument. And we can pull the link to the CATS video later. I don't have it with me. But I think one of the benefits of the BEDC is that its staff is they're local folks working on behalf of local government or and local interests, excuse me. You know, they do have a contract with us, but, you know, and I think that what that does is that we don't have the same issues that folks probably have at the state level because there's so much transparency at the local level because we you know we work closely together. They know what the needs are in the community. And, you know, I think, quite frankly, you look at some of the businesses that have come in because of the work of the BEDC. And I think, you know, I've been on the council for 5 years. And, you know, we're asking some really interesting and tough questions when tax abatements come through. And I'm not seeing a lot of that corruption happening at the local level.
Okay, fair enough. I want to move on. One of your other points of focus is quality of life improvements. That seems like a very vague concept. So make that tangible for us. What exactly
is it? Sure. There's been some really great research coming out of Ball State on quality of life. And the reason Ball State started doing this research was that folks in the midst of the pandemic or after the pandemic realized they could work from home wherever. They could work remotely from wherever. And so you saw a lot of communities, particularly smaller communities, really starting to ask the question, well, how do we get some of those folks to move here? How do we get folks to want to relocate here? And that brought into question, well, why are people moving to a certain locality? And so the work out of Ball State pointed out two main things that I like to focus on, and their research is much more in depth and, you know, we can get into some of their findings, but number one is public safety. So as county commissioner, we work very closely with the sheriff to make sure that our community is safe. Not only safe, but also that, you know, we are working with those folks to, you know, make sure that our community comports with the values that we espouse. And I think Sheriff Ruben Marte is doing a great job. I think that he's really making sure that not only we are being kept safe, but that he's doing it in a really positive way. And part of what I'll point to is that recently we had a lot of people come into Monroe County for the eclipse, and there was a lot of work 12 months in advance to do just tabletop exercise after tabletop exercise to make sure that we were ready for an influx of folks. And there were certainly issues that happened, but by and large, you know, these types of events go off pretty smoothly given the number of people. And, you know, we know how to do this because we have home football games and home basketball games and home baseball games and parents weekend at IU and all these other things. And so public safety is really important to us. We know how to do it. And again, that's important. The second thing is good schools. Folks want to move to a place where the schools are good. MCC, SC, and RBB are top notch. You know, we work closely with the school board to make sure that we've got good working relationships where we need to have those relationships. But, you know, we also have pretty good working relationships with Indiana University and Ivy Tech. I was just over in Bryan Hall at Indiana University talking with some of the leadership over there about some of the community needs that we have. We talked a lot about housing. We talked a lot about amenities and why professors stay or don't stay. We'll get to that in the housing conversation. But those are the two key areas why I think folks are moving here is because they know this is a safe community. and they know that the schools are good. So they feel comfortable bringing their families here. They want to bring their families here. But the problem is that our population is pretty stable because we don't have enough housing.
Yeah, we are, in addition to being a safe and well-educated community, we're also a welcoming community. And on equity and inclusion, you would like to create a Monroe County Anti-Racism Task Force charged with creating an anti-racism strategic plan. And also, you'd like to empower the Monroe County Women's Commission to generate an annual report with recommendations.
That's
Do you have an idea ahead of time, kind of what suggestions you'd like to see from these bodies?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we worked really closely with the Garden LLC. It's a local Black-owned business here in Monroe County. Just after George Floyd was murdered and Breonna Taylor was murdered, there was a lot of interest in making sure the county was aware of its own bias and had at least some measure of cultural competency. And so the Garden LLC came before the Board of Commissioners for that contract. They were, it did not go well. It was pretty tense, but eventually the Board of Commissioners did approve that contract. And the Garden, led by Nichelle Whitney, took the county through a series of pre-posts kind of analyses of attitudes. And so after the pre kind of evaluation, we did the intervention, or she did the intervention, excuse me, which was to do cultural competency training and bias awareness. And it was really good. It was really positive. Again, you know, we had never done anything like this before, at least in my memory. And then there was a post-test. And what the post-test showed us was that attitudes are pretty sticky, that that attitudes didn't change all that much, and that we still have a lot of work to do. Now, when we asked for the Garden LLC to come back, that was rejected. There wasn't any appetite from the Board of Commissioners to bring those folks back. I think that's wrongheaded. I think we should definitely bring back folks that can continue that work to do more work with the staff in Monroe County on some of these issues. And so I think that's really important. The second reason why I'm calling for this task force and for the anti-racism work is because the NAACP has been doing study after study on the racial discrepancy inside the jail. So we are incarcerating more African-American or Black individuals than is proportionate to the census data. And so the NAACP has been very out front with this, with these reports. In 2019, they did some analysis to try and find causation as to why this is the case. And that report was given to the JFAC, the Justice Fiscal Advisory Commission that I led. Really interesting data. And their conclusion was, we need more. We need more support from the county commissioners to do this work. We need a plan to address some of what's going on. And Scott, it's really embarrassing. And it's quite frankly frustrating. That plan does not exist. We have been hearing from the NAACP year after year. And, you know, we went through the Justice Fiscal Advisory Commission, made some policy recommendations on a fiscal level. You know, we've just heard, you know, crickets from the county commissioners on this pretty serious problem. And so as, you know, I'm talking with folks, you know, as I see kind of the data that came out of the Garden LLC work, as well as what the NAACP is telling us, I'm concerned. And I'm concerned enough that I want to do something about it. And I think this is the right direction forward. The last item, of course, is the Women's Commission. They're not currently producing an annual report. When we were working on justice issues in the jail, they produced probably the most comprehensive reports on what we should be doing in terms of justice reform in the county. And the women that are currently on the Monroe County Women's Commissioner are really, really engaged, intelligent individuals who are yearning to provide additional, resources into the county. And right now, it just seems like roadblock after roadblock with the current county commissioners. I want to take down those barriers, and I really want, their ability to give recommendations to the county to shine. And I think it should be done in a transparent way.
Okay. On to the next topic on climate change. Now, this is a global issue. There's only so much we can do here at the local level to stop it. So, it looks like your focus is adaptation and resilience. What does that look like?
So right now, Monroe County does not have a climate action plan. Indiana University is close to, or they have adopted one. The city of Bloomington has adopted one, and we have not adopted one. Again, a lack of planning from the county commissioners, I think, is really to blame here. As we are looking at what actions to take, there's not been a process to go to the community and say, what do you think we should be doing? How are you thinking about this? And keep in mind, in Monroe County, we have a lot of green organizations that are working here and have been working here for a long time. There's a lot of institutional knowledge and wisdom that we can be using. And so I think the climate action plan is the next step for Monroe County, should I be elected. And I think the important part with that is the work that's been done in the status quo is, again, solar panels on county buildings. In fact, we approved an ARPA suggestion from the commissioners to do a study on which buildings that Monroe County owns that you should put on solar panels. But, in my campaign, we've been handing out this piece of literature to thousands of people. We've now talked to over 7,000 people in Monroe County as part of this campaign. And when I talk about what are the barriers for you to put up solar panels, it's almost always some degree of cost, or I just haven't gotten around to it, right? There's other things in life that's more important. So why can't your county government work with your city government to develop programs for individuals to be able to make changes to, their, buildings or houses or whatever? And I think that's really something that we can move forward on. Again, in the status quo, the relationship between the city and the county has been so damaged that work like that doesn't happen. I've got really good working relationships with all sorts of folks at the city, including Mayor Kerry Thompson. And I think that's something that's kind of in that middle ground that we can really work on as a community. That's kind of the adaptation. And, there's all sorts of things in there about whether or not, the new construction that we have can be electric only. There's stuff in there about batteries. There's all sorts of stuff that we can talk about. But the point is, as we're talking about for all of Monroe County, is you don't want an elected official to just sit in their office and come up with, ideas. We need community to come together and come up with those plans. Resilience, I think I've talked about a little bit already, but that's the idea that we are facing some unique vulnerabilities as a community, and we really do need some cross-sector plans on how to address those vulnerabilities. So, whether it's warning systems or it's guides on how to, think about tourism and green tourism and how to find new cooling stations that, historically we've thought about fire stations as those cooling stations. I don't know, if you're, the older folks in your life, are going to pick up and go to a fire station if their power goes out on a summer day like it did last year. So we're thinking more about, where are the community gathering places? And as county commissioners, how can we encourage the community to build those large, community gathering spots where we can ensure that even in times of power outage and on a high heat day, that we can keep folks cool. So there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot more detail. This, we could probably do an entire podcast just on climate resiliency. We could do an entire podcast just on climate action planning. But there's a lot of work to be done. And part of the reason why I'm running is I've started that work in Monroe County, and I want to continue it.
All right. Your most detailed policy proposals come on the topic of housing. You've said, quote, rising housing costs, limited supply, and poor decisions by the current county commissioners, end quote, have made it nearly impossible to house the whole population. Please explain this. How do you plan on solving this problem?
Sure. So a lot of this comes down to zoning reform. In 2019, the current county commissioners had three separate neighborhoods come up for their approval from the plan commission. So the way that it works in county government is that land is identified as potential for housing. And so it's zoned that way, zoned as housing. And then the plan commission works with a lot of cases, times a developer to develop plans for that. And there's a lot of back and forth. Ever watched a plan commission meeting? You can see a lot of that about, you know, where does the driveway go and where do the trees get planted and, you know, all this. There's a lot of back and forth on the details. But once all those are ironed out, it comes to the board of commissioners, the county commissioners, and they give the final approval or denial. In 2019, there were three projects that came forward that were workforce housing, affordable housing, and the commissioners rejected all three. The community was supportive of these three developments, but the voices from, you know, some sections of the community seemed to drown those out, and the commissioners voted against them. And so one of the things I'm really concerned about is not only those three votes back in 2021, but now in 2024, we have a county development ordinance that has demonstrably reduced the zones for residential and increased the zones for agricultural. So this entire conversation that we've been having has been about how exciting Monroe County is. It's a great place full of assets. Folks want to come here. We're a welcoming community. But what they're hearing from county government, particularly in the county commissioners, is we are rejecting new neighborhoods and we're pushing forward a county development ordinance that promotes agricultural zoning ahead of residential zoning. And so what you'll hear sometimes is the current commissioners say, well, you can still have houses in agricultural areas. But the problem is that if you zone agricultural, the plot sizes are 1 acre or larger. So it's really hard to make an argument against sprawl when every plot is 1 acre or larger. What I'm proposing in my plan is to think more about the way that we're zoning these areas to allow for the full spectrum of housing. We know the housing crisis is going on throughout the country, and it's problematic in larger cities and in college towns. We're certainly feeling it here, and we know there's just not enough housing. We're not going to solve the housing crisis by building a single-family home on a one-acre lot next to a single-family home on a one-acre lot. We're going to get there with a full spectrum of housing. That means I'm not against really big homes. Right. If you want to live in a really big home, that's your prerogative. You don't want me telling you which house to live in. What I want to do is I want to provide those options so that whatever stage of life you're in, you can find a home in Monroe County that fits your lifestyle. So I've got two kids. They're getting older. They're getting wilder. We needed a house to fit that, you know, so that all their toys could accumulate because grandma and grandpa buy them too many toys. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed that home. But in, you know, 20, 30 years, when the kids are gone, we're going to need to downsize. We need to find that place where we can downsize. Similarly, before we had kids, you know, we lived in apartments. We wanted to rent. It made the most sense for us to rent. So we need that wide spectrum. So not only do we need multifamily housing, but we also need different styles of that multifamily housing in addition to rental units and in addition to single family housing. I don't want to get rid of any one type. I do want to broaden the way that we're talking about what's possible in our zones so that it includes more choices for people depending on their lifestyle. And I think we can do that. And I, you know, Jackie Gillen Nestor, who's head of our planning department, is just a really, really great asset here in Monroe County. She's got a great team of young planners, and they're very focused on the environment. They're very focused on how can we make sure there's enough houses for everybody, but also protect our wetlands? How do we make sure there's enough houses for everybody, but also protect our forests, our lake, habitats for, you know, for wild animals? There's a lot of great conversations happening. And so when we get to this conversation about housing, a lot of times you'll hear people try and, you know, funnel you into a binary decision, this or that. And I think the time for that is over. I think we really need to get rid of that binary thinking and say, how can we do this and this? How can we build more houses and continue to protect our environment? It's possible. We can do it. And that's what I bring to the table.
Okay. And that's one of the things I was going to ask is, like, how do we balance the need for increased housing stock with the need to protect the environment? Do you, do you have thoughts on that, or are you just deferring to
no, to
the experts there?
No. We can get into some of the zoning issues here, but like one of the things that we have is we have protective overlays in our planning. You can't build, Soviet style apartments on the hill overlooking Lake Monroe, right? We're not going to do that, right? We need to protect our water source. We don't want that erosion to come down into the lake. We don't want the different pollution to come down into the lake. And so we definitely have different ways of protecting the different environmental assets, the lake, the forests, the wilderness on the south side, but also some of the karst features that we have dotted throughout the community. Again, mm-hmm. we don't want to put someone's home that they're raising their family in on top of a karst feature and the bottom falls out one day, right? There are things that we can do to make sure that we are identifying the environmental assets that we want to protect and we're building in areas where those don't exist. The second thing that we can do is that we can promote sustainability while we're building, and we can promote conservation while we're building. This is one of the things that Jackie and the Monroe County Planning Department is doing a really good job of, is by making sure that when new developments happen, that we're planting more trees. When new developments happen, we're working with stormwater to put in stormwater collection units so that when we get above average rain, or we get above average, you know, flooding or whatever happens, that it's going down into an area that not only features as a rainwater collection unit, but also as habitat for all sorts of songbirds and wildlife that exists. So as we're doing this work, you know, that's something that we're really trying to do. The other thing that I think can be done is think of a transportation-based development, making sure that new development is close to trails, new development is close to bus lines, new development is close to the amenities that you have, so that we can make things as walkable as possible. My kids and I, my wife just cycled over to watch the eclipse at a park. And we use some of the infrastructure that's been built up with our trails to do just that. And I think that's part of the housing part. And you're starting to see how each of my 5 points, there's intersectionality across all of them. Mm-hmm. So in order to build more housing, we need good jobs. In order to have people that want to live here in good housing, we need good quality of life. We need to make sure that we're doing it in an equitable way, right? We know about redlining. We know about the restrictive covenants that happen in neighborhoods. We know we need to be equitable moving forward, and we know that we need to protect the environment. Again, we need to get away from binary thinking that just because we're putting up a housing a series of housing units that we are automatically doing it for only one sort of person, and we are necessarily damaging the environment. With smart people, and we've got, keep in mind, we got Indiana University and Ivy Tech in our backyard. We can do this. Other communities are already doing this. We don't need to reinvent the wheel.
I would be remiss if I did not point out that your largest campaign contributor is a home builder winning your construction. How will you ensure that there is no conflict of interest or even the appearance of conflict of interest?
Sure. Sure. So, you know, campaign finance in Indiana is pretty transparent. I'm very proud of the work that my campaign has been doing to raise funds. And certainly, you know, Winnegar Construction has been very generous. But right now, our average contribution is $60. So we are raising money from a lot of folks. And just because you give me money does not mean that I'm necessarily going to be, you know, in your pocket. And I think as proof of that is that there are a number of folks who do development that are local here in Monroe County. So the check against my, you know, interest being bought will be that when I am commissioner, if every single project goes to Winnegar Construction, you know, that's a problem, right? There are a number of other folks out there who have been born here, raised here locally. They can build houses too. And I, you know, as a, the other thing I'll make is that should Winnegar Construction come forward with a housing development while I'm on the Board of Commissioners, I will very publicly note that during my campaign, I did receive campaign contributions. But that I don't have a fiduciary interest in Winnegar Construction per se. So I will make that point when it comes up. And I think that's important for folks to know. And a lot of these folks supported other campaigns historically and currently. And you know, we do need to keep an eye on it. And Scott, quite frankly, that's some of the great work that I've noticed you've been doing is kind of calling out the donors. For, you know, who they've been supporting. And that's important work to make this transparent.
Thank you. So let's focus on the three big contentious countywide issues that we've got going on right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
First, annexation. Two of the current commissioners, Penny Githens and your primary opponent, Julie Thomas, were vociferously anti-annexation and led that County Residents Against Annexation organization. Where do you stand on the issue and why?
So number one, I am vociferously against any elected official telling you that you are annexed without asking your opinion. The way that the city did this, it was not the way that we should allow for cities to grow. You know, and again, I've been out into these areas door knocking. I've been out talking to folks and they are rightly upset that there wasn't a community conversation that involved them asking them whether they wanted to move into these areas. Right? There was no vote, you know, and so folks resorted to legal action. And of course, as we're recording, this is in the court's hands right now. They heard oral arguments earlier this month, and they're expected to rule, I think, this month on some of these annexed areas. So that's where I stand on these particular annexation stances. And, you know, the county does have reason to be concerned. There are pretty clear fiscal impacts to, portions of the county going into the city. And that's certainly a reason for concern. However, the city will then be responsible for the services in that area. And so the county will not be responsible for services in those areas. So we do need to be thinking about this in a little more of a nuanced way. I know that my colleagues on the council started a long-term fiscal planning committee. And one of the first things they're looking at is trying to think about the whatever the court does, what's the fiscal impact on the county? From a broader perspective, cities grow. We know that cities grow. And, you know, should I be elected and should, you know, Carrie Thompson, the current mayor, continue with some of her campaign promises? We know that our community will grow. The way that we do those boundaries shift, we need to be much more conscientious that it's people first, right? So it's that for all of Monroe County. It's the individuals who live in these areas. They need to have a voice in the matter. So moving forward, certainly we'll be asking for conversations to be happening well in advance of an annexation decision, and certainly be asking for a vote to take place with those residents so that their voice can be heard about where they want to go.
Okay, moving on. Regarding the convention center and the expansion, from what I've seen, most county leaders are basically in agreement that we need a larger convention center. Mm-hmm. And there were years back and forth between the county and former mayor John Hamilton's administration. But just last month, the new mayor, Carrie Thompson, signed an interlocal agreement between the city and the county. So what are your thoughts on this whole process? What's left to do? And when are shovels going in the ground?
Great question. I voted for that interlocal agreement, came to the council, very proud to vote for that. I served on the Convention and Visitor Bureau Center, and I want to put a finer point on why a convention center is so important. We tend to not get the big national conventions here in Monroe County. We're just not big enough to get those big national. So Comic-Con's not going to be coming here, right? A lot of times what happens is trade associations or state associations bring their members down here for a convention. And what we kept hearing from folks is, you know, I have a lot of our members are LGBTQ+, and they don't feel safe going to any other community. That Monroe County, you know, is a safe place for people to go. Or members of different associations where their membership is predominantly BIPOC. Again, same issues, right? They know that, you know, Monroe County is a safe, welcoming place for people to come. That's why an expanded convention center is important, is because we will be able to offer even more of these associations, that type of experience that they feel like the membership can come here. I am very, very proud of my support in terms of using food and beverage tax dollars to expand this convention center. The other thing I'm very proud of is that I voted to get the decisions out of my hands. You don't want me choosing the carpet for this new place. You don't want me choosing the color of the paint. I'm not the right guy. There's now a CIB. They meet regularly. You can find their meeting schedule on the county's website, co.monroe.in.us. They're the ones who are going to be making some pretty serious decisions about which plots of land to break. They're going to be working with different bonding authorities to bond out the money. And so those decisions, unfortunately, haven't been made yet. So I don't have news to break on this podcast, but I would encourage folks to stay tuned to the CIB meetings, because that's where you're going to find that late breaking news on where the expansion, which direction the expansion is going to go, and some of the decisions they're going to make. I certainly have been pushing for the new expansion convention center to include some of those public spaces that I was talking about, those gathering spaces, as well as a LEED certification, so that we can be building as green as possible.
Yeah. And now on the last one, we talked about this a little bit already, but the jail. I think this has been like the most controversial issue in the county over the last couple years. The need for a jail, where to build it, what is your recommendation, and how did you reach that conclusion?
My recommendation is we need to build the jail as close to social services as possible and accessible by public transportation. I reached this conclusion because when we listen to the public, right? We listen to, you know, providers in the area who are working with inmates or working with individuals who were just released. And they said, if you build this way out by Monroe Hospital, you're going to be letting people out in the middle of the country. There's not going to be any services nearby. Buses don't run out there. You're going to have people getting hit on the highway. You're going to have people getting hit on the county roads. It's going to be a disaster. So we need to have the jail built in one of those two, with those two things. That being said, that it's going to be tricky. There's going to be probably some trade-offs that we're going to need to make where we're going to be working with Bloomington Transit to get transportation to a certain area. We don't have an answer on which location it's going to be yet, but I would certainly, when I'm elected, if we don't have a location selected by the time that I'm sworn into office on January 1st, that's going to be a major problem. That's going to be one of my top priorities. One of the additional things that we need to be talking about, and no one wants to talk about this, is no one wants a new jail, right? Or at least no one wants a jail that looks like what it currently is. Currently, about 20% of the inmates at any given time have a mental health diagnosis. We need to stop incarcerating people with mental health issues. Now, I fully understand, you know, I've got great working relationships with the Board of Judges. And, you know, if someone is dangerous, then we need to make sure that the public is safe. But we need to make sure that there is an alternative place where the judges can send people to go. And you know, Representative Steuerwald and Representative Pierce have been working on some treatment options, some mental health issue, some spaces in the state. But, you know, last cycle, not this cycle, but last cycle, they passed something, but it wasn't funded. The frustration with what's happening at the state is palpable. But I think moving forward, we need to keep pushing for regional treatment centers, because that's going to allow the judges who are responsible for putting someone in jail and releasing them from jail a place for us to be treatment minded instead of incarceration minded. And right now, I don't think anybody is incarceration minded, but it's certainly one of the only options that we have when someone, you know, does, you know, break a law. And so I think that's a big deal. The other issue is substance use disorder. And that's a tricky nut to figure out. But again, we need something different that looks very diversion based for individual substance use disorder. You know, we know that that's more of a treatment issue than it is a carceral issue. So when I'm elected, I'm certainly going to be using what I heard from the providers in the area. And I'm thinking like Stone Belt and, you know, New Leaf, New Life and New Hope and, you know, Beacon. You know, they were all saying we've got to be thinking differently about this. And I agree. And, you know, right now it's time for questionnaires for candidates. And that's what I'm saying in my questionnaires, too, is, you know, the jail of tomorrow is not going to look like what we've got here. And I want to be really clear on a point here that I've heard over and over again, is that treatment has to happen outside the jail. It has to be community-based. So there's been some push. We saw a jail in Ohio where they brought treatment into the jail being done by correctional officers. And I don't think that's the way to move forward either.
So if I'm hearing correctly, it sounds like 15 years on, we're still not much closer to putting shovels in the ground and getting this thing built.
Keep in mind, the statutory guidelines for whose decision that is the commissioner's. So there's a lot of dithering going on, but at the end of the day, it is the commissioner's decision. As part of the county council, I can make fiscal recommendations on the number of beds. I can make fiscal recommendations on the square footage or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's the commissioners that make this decision. So that's why I'm really anxious to get and do this work for all of Monroe County, because you're absolutely right. This is the most contentious issue, and we've got to move forward. There's got to be progress.
Okay, thank you. So coming to the end here, and I'm going to give you the last word. Give us the final pitch, some closing remarks, and finally, tell our listeners where they can find out more about you, your campaign, maybe opportunities to donate or volunteer.
great. Scott, thanks for this opportunity to talk about the issues that are really impacting people. You know, a lot of times we're hearing about big national issues, but, you know, as I'm out there talking with voters with my team, we're hearing that folks really do want the basic things that county government can provide. That's housing. It's a good paying job. It's a safe place to raise your family. It's a place where we're protecting the environment, and it's a place where we're doing all of that equitably. And that's exactly the type of campaign that I'm running. You know, unfortunately, on a podcast, you can't show a lot of action. But I would encourage folks to go to peteriverson.org or just Google Peter Iverson. And there you can see just the type of action that we're taking. You know, we're one of the very few campaigns out there that is actively phone banking. We need your help doing that, getting people to the polls. Early voting started today in Monroe County. My wife and I were out there proudly exercising our civic duty. But we need folks out there phone banking. We're one of the only campaigns. We're knocking 4 days a week. We're knocking for about 16 hours every single week. We need help getting people out to the polls. And you know, we're doing everything we can to promote democracy. You know, we're really proud that we've reached over 7,000 people here in Monroe County now, just to really make sure that, you know, we are promoting these the right to vote, and we're listening to folks. And so a lot of the items that you see at peteriverson.org, particularly the issues, have been refined based on conversations that we're having with people. And so that's the type of leadership that I think this community wants. That's the type of leadership you're going to get with Peter Iverson. And I encourage you to vote and visit peteriverson.org.
Thank you very much, Peter Iverson. Appreciate you joining the Who's Left podcast.
Well, thanks again. And, you know, I'm going to go onto your Substack here and, you know, subscribe. I just love everything you're doing here. And I encourage all of your listeners to do the same.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Have a good day.
Once again, that was Democratic candidate for Monroe County Commissioner Peter Iverson. I'll be back real soon with part two, in which I'll interview Jody Madera and give my thoughts on the state of these county commissioner races. For now, thanks for listening. Follow me on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, and TikTok at Who's Left, and on most other social media sites at ScottRodge78. If you want to reach me, send me a DM on the socials or email me at ScottRodge78@gmail.com. My guest today, Peter Iverson, can be found online at peteriverson.org. That's Iverson with two E's, I-V-E-R-S-E-N. If you haven't yet, when you're finished here, go to scottaaronrogers.substack.com and subscribe at the paid level. Help me keep this project going. Until next time, this has been the Who's Left podcast. I'm Scott Aaron Rogers. Love each other, Indiana.